What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Mind Over Macros podcast. As always, I am your host, Mike Milner. In today's episode, we're going to talk about something that is very fun. It's fun because if you're like me and you enjoy food, you probably have been wondering, what is the upper limit that you can eat without gaining weight? Or better stated, can I use food to upregulate my metabolism? And it's a great question and it's a great topic because we often talk about the reverse. We often talk about it from the lens of calorie restriction, and we know what that does to your metabolism. We know the protective mechanisms that kick in. Your body wants to keep you alive. Your body only cares about survival. And therefore, when energy is scarce, your body will downregulate your metabolic rate. It will prioritize survival over other functions. So we see depressed immune system, lower sex drive, reduction in sex hormones, reduced thyroid function, things that are not too pretty and not super fun to deal with. So the best way that I've heard this described is that if you truly eat 1,200 calories a day for a long time, for a long enough time, and everybody's different in when these adaptations will occur, but if you're truly, like actually eating 1,200 calories a day, eventually you will create a 1,200 calorie metabolism, meaning that that will ultimately become your new adapted maintenance. And I say adapted maintenance because it's not your real maintenance. It's just what you have said to your body. This is all we're getting every day. Like, this is it. So you got to make this work. And your body is like, noted, I'm very smart and adaptive, so I will make this work. And that's where the metabolic adaptations occur. We don't often talk about this from the flip side of metabolic adaptations in reverse. There's a lot of talk about reverse dieting, and I've done plenty of episodes on reverse dieting, metabolic priming, things that create a lot of controversy. So what I wanted to do is go into the research. What do we actually know from research? And then also just personal experience and anecdote and client experience as well. Because I think that it's important to talk about both. What do we know from literature? And then what do we know from experience as well? Before I get into that, I would love it if you could do me a favor and leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify if you want to be eligible to win a free supplement of your choice from one of our sponsors, Cured Nutrition, Organifi, or Legion Athletics. All you do is you open up the podcast app on your phone, you go to the search button, you type in Mind Over Macros. You click into the show, you scroll all the way down until you see the ratings and reviews, and then you leave a review and you're eligible to win. And I pick the winner and read out the review every Wednesday. And that's how it works. And you get to pick any product of your choice, and it's yours. The other thing that you can do is subscribe, follow, like the show. I don't know what the proper term is because I think it's different on every platform. But if you're listening on a platform, any platform, then there is some kind of follow or subscribe button that just notifies you of new episodes. And that's really the key to growing this thing. Apparently, the podcast platforms value subscriber data versus any other data. So when they see a show that has a lot of listeners, but not just listeners, a lot of listeners that actually subscribe or follow, then they prioritize showing that podcast to other people in a similar niche. So like, if I'm listening to a nutrition podcast, then the platform will be like, hey, because you listen to this, you might also like this other show. I want to be that other show since I have a small viewership. And the way to do that is to get more people to subscribe and follow to my show. So that's my favor. If you can subscribe, follow, it would be greatly appreciated. So this was a topic that was brought to my attention with another DM conversation. Again, I'm going to continue to encourage that because that's where I come up with these ideas is through DMs. And basically, I had an individual who said, like, why is it that our bodies can downregulate so well, but not upregulate? Like, you know, we consistently have to lower calories. So, you know, we start a diet and we go into a calorie deficit and our body, you know, taps into stored energy, body fat, and we lose fat. But then we hit a plateau. Inevitably, you cannot, like, if you stay with the same calorie amount for a long enough period of time, and again, everyone's different, so I can't tell you exactly how long that is, but some people have a very adaptive and reactive metabolism. Some people, it takes a little bit longer. Totally normal. But eventually, you're going to plateau because let's just say your maintenance calories are 2,000. And don't worry about the actual numbers that I'm using. It's just examples. Let's just say your maintenance calories are 2,000 and you reduce it by 500. Well, that's a pretty significant deficit there. So what's that, a fourth? Yeah, so you're creating a 25% deficit in that scenario. And then eventually that 1,500 calorie deficit will no longer be a deficit and you'll hit a plateau. Why? Because again, your body is basically getting the signal that this is the only amount of energy we get for life. Like, this is supposed to sustain us. And let's not forget that in addition to the adaptations that we often think about, like slowing down your metabolic rate, reduction in thyroid, reduction in sex hormones, depressed immune system, loss of cycle, things like that. We often think of those as the adaptations. Let's not forget that losing body fat is also part of that, also part of the adaptation process. Now, it might be muscle that you lose depending on your activity. And if you're using your muscles, if you're strength training, you might lose a little bit of tissue, muscle tissue, fat tissue. You might lose some water. You might lose some bone density, things that might occur through the adaptation process. However, inevitably there will be the plateau. And then your new adapted maintenance is 1,500 calories. So what most people do is they hit the plateau and they're like, damn, that sucks. I was making progress. Now I'm not. Let me reduce even more. So they go down to 1,200 calories. And then the same thing happens. Now there's all these mechanisms that kick in, like hunger and cravings, and you're not moving as much because your body is trying to create balance, homeostasis. So it wants you to move less when you're eating less. Your body wants you to move less when you're eating less. It also wants you to eat more. So it's sending signals like hunger, cravings, to get you to eat more. It's telling you to go find food. Energy is scarce. Go find food. Don't spend as much energy, right? Don't move as much. Don't spend as much energy because we don't have enough energy coming in to support all of these processes in the body that we need to function. So all of that makes sense. The question is, why can't we do that in reverse? If we can create a 1,200 calorie metabolism from a 2,000 calorie metabolism, why can't we create a 4,000 calorie metabolism from a 2,000 calorie metabolism? And it seems unfair, but if we think about it, the reason why it's not equal, and we're going to talk about upregulating, but the reason why it's not equal is because think about which is more of an immediate threat to survival. Energy is non-existent. Is that more of a threat than abundance of energy? Of course. It's more of an immediate threat. Now you could sit here and argue, well, like the long-term implications of obesity, but yes, your body is not thinking long-term. Your body is thinking in the moment. And overall, it is more of a threat to survival when energy is non-existent or scarce. So that's why. That's why it's not equal. I wish it were equal. I wish we could just continue to upregulate to, you know, 4,000, 5,000. It would make my life so much easier because I love food. I am a foodie at heart. Even just this past weekend, I was in Orlando and had a delicious steak dinner one night. And then I had birria tacos one night and had a steak fajita. And what else did I have? Ice cream, all the things. I love to eat. I love food. And so it would be great if we could create a 4,000 calorie metabolism, 5,000 calorie metabolism. Now, you actually can. So that's, it can be done. It just requires way more manual effort. So what happens is there's a lot of stuff that is like a mirror. So I'm going to talk about the things that are equal before I talk about things that are not equal. And then I'm going to talk about some of the studies and research. So the things that are equal, when we eat less, our body subconsciously makes us move less. When we eat more, our body subconsciously wants us to move more. So those things are pretty equal. Hunger and satiety signals, like you'll see that obviously both ways. We see that when food is more abundant, that we'll have an increase in leptin and a reduction in ghrelin. So leptin being the satiety signal hormone, ghrelin being the hunger signaling hormone. When you're eating less, ghrelin goes up, leptin goes down. When you're eating more, leptin goes up, ghrelin goes down. Now, there are outliers to this. There are situations where food composition can make a big difference. So it depends on what you're eating. So I'm making general statements that apply, but there are outliers. There are situations where you can be like, yeah, but there's always a yeah, but. Yeah, but what if I'm only eating like, you know, naked carbohydrates, like just straight, you know, Swedish fish or something like that. Like, yeah, if we're overindulging on that, we're going to see random fluctuations, not random, but we're going to see inconsistent fluctuations and hormones that wouldn't necessarily be the same as a high protein, well-balanced meal. Even if I'm eating in a surplus, it doesn't matter. If the meal composition is balanced, we're going to see an increase in leptin, a decrease in ghrelin. So all of those things are pretty equal. And then part of the adaptation process, right? Like energy deficit, part of the adaptation process is body fat loss. Energy surplus, part of the adaptation process is body fat gain. Now, the real thing, the real kick in the nuts is that when you are in a deficit and your body registers this as famine, when you do start to eat in a surplus, you know, there's part of the survival process that's like, well, let's pack away some of this fat because in case of another famine, having more body fat increases your likelihood of surviving a famine. So there's that part of it where it's the yo-yo dieting is the worst thing that you can do for your body composition. The constant like restrict, overindulge. Because you're basically telling your body that there's famine and then, oh my God, we got this food. Now let's store it. And if you've created a shitty metabolic situation, for lack of a better word, then you're going to see fat storage, you know, happen much easier. And again, this also depends on the composition, but we'll get into some of those nuances. And I think I mentioned this on a podcast recently about how you can increase the amount of fat cells that you have, but you cannot decrease. And again, that's a survival thing. If like, why would your body want to get rid of potential storage space when that would create a situation where you would starve to death quicker in the event of a famine, right? So like, if you just put process everything through the lens of, My body only cares about survival. All of these things make sense, even if we don't like them, even if they don't seem fair. They make sense from a survival perspective. More fat cells, more storage. Better chance of surviving a famine. Less fat cells, less storage. Worse chance of surviving a famine. That's it. That's the reason why. And it makes perfect sense, even if we don't like it. So when you are, so like the things that are not equal is where you create a new maintenance when you're in a deficit inevitably. And again, all of this is predicated on actually eating the amount. Like when I say you're eating 1200 calories a day, I'm talking about every single day. It is a consistent and real 1200 calories, which most people don't actually do. And again, this is backed by research. Most people are really bad at tracking and logging and having an accurate representation of how much they're eating. This was also tested in dietitians and nutritionists and experts who do this for a living. And even they were pretty far off. I think it was like, you know, they were still off by up to 20% with their estimated calorie targets. And that's not, you know, like 20%, let's just use 1,000 calories. 20% is 200 calories. The 1,000 calorie person could actually be the 1,200 calorie person. Anyway, the bottom line is I'm talking about real numbers. If you are really eating 1,200 calories per day, eventually, over time, you create a 1,200 calorie metabolism. The same is not true for overconsumption. Again, because survival. That's it. So your body doesn't view that overconsumption as an immediate threat to survival. Now, there are certain mechanisms that kick in. Like I mentioned, you will be inclined to move more. You will, you know, get increase in satiety. And so you might find that your supposed surplus is not really a surplus because let's just say your maintenance is 2,000 calories, but you start to eat, let's say 2,300 calories, but you start moving more naturally. You start fidgeting more. You start walking more. You start, you know, doing more things. Well, now you've increased your energy expenditure and that 2,300 might not be a surplus anymore. That's the main mechanism, by the way, of increasing your maintenance. Now, you can increase your metabolic rate by building muscle. You can increase, you can kind of manipulate your maintenance by protein consumption. And I'm going to talk about that with when I get into some of the research stuff. But the biggest difference, like adding muscle does not like overhaul your metabolism. It helps. And every little bit helps. So absolutely put on some muscle, like make that a priority. But it's not this like overhaul of your metabolic rate where you go from, you know, a 2,000 calorie metabolism to a 3,000 calorie metabolism because you built, you know, 5-10 pounds of muscle. Every little bit helps. It's just not massive. What is massive is your daily activity. You know, you take somebody who's sedentary, who's walking 2,000 steps a day, and you get them to 10,000 steps a day over time, that makes a huge difference in their metabolic rate and how many calories they're burning and ultimately what they can eat as maintenance. So this would be a good transition to get into like the actual research. And then we'll go with some like practical application things that we can do. There's been a lot of overfeeding studies when it comes to sedentary population. Most have been done on sedentary people. There have been a handful of overfeeding studies done in like athletic populations where some kind of like strength training, resistance training was incorporated. So we'll talk about both. The sedentary population overfeeding studies are pretty straightforward, and they were all conducted pretty similarly in the sense that it was mostly just we're establishing baseline. A lot of them were very well controlled. Some of them were just based off of like food logs and stuff, which is, you know, not super reliable. But a lot of them, you know, we've got 3 months of overfeeding, 9 weeks, 30 days, 9 days, 22 days, 100 days, 20 days, 2 weeks. So you can see 3 weeks, 3 weeks, 3 weeks. I'm literally just rattling, like I'm looking at a list and I'm just telling you the length. 14 days, 8 weeks, 4 weeks, 4 weeks, 8 weeks, like all these. And I could keep going, but it's getting boring. The basic concept of a lot of them was just set up the baseline and then increase. So what they would do with the calorie surplus is they would either do a percent increase or they would do a calorie number. So like the first one I'm looking at was a 9 week overfeeding study on sedentary people. 50% surplus from baseline. Okay. And then, you know, it's looking at a average fat gain. They split it up for like fat mass versus fat free mass. And by the way, fat free mass does not necessarily mean muscle. It can mean muscle and water and, you know, skeletal, you know, tissue, bones, things like that. So anything that's not fat is included in fat free mass. And then we have fat mass. So this basic, the concept is increased by 50%, increased by 1,000 calories, increased by 60%, increased by 1,000 calories, 1,000 calories. That seems to be a very popular one. Here's one that was 1,200 calories. We got 20%, 40%, 60%, 70%, 40%, 800 calories. Like it's all across the board. And, you know, the conclusion is really straightforward. When you increase, this is like going to be the most shocking thing ever. When you increase your calories above maintenance into a surplus, you will see an increase in fat mass. And the conclusion used to be that every 3,500 calories is 1 pound of fat. However, that's not super accurate. It's not a bad estimate. It's just not entirely accurate. So, and really, there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, because we do see certain mechanisms kick in when we attempt to eat in a surplus. So we might start moving more, as an example, which would make the math change a little bit. But the biggest difference is that protein seems to be the disruptor for all of that. Protein seems to be the thing that's like not so fast. Like you want a simple math equation? Well, we're here to like completely fuck that up for you in a good way. Now, again, most of these studies show there is an increase in fat mass. There's also an increase in fat-free mass. But when it comes to sedentary population, most of the increase in fat-free mass is not muscle because they are sedentary. Now, when we add the studies on resistance training, with resistance training, we see that there is an increase in fat mass and fat-free mass, where the fat-free mass also includes some skeletal muscle growth, which is a good thing. Then, you know, then there's like water and things like that. Now, when it comes to resistance training, that's the biggest difference, is that body composition, the gain is not entirely from fat, where most of the gain when it comes to the sedentary population is from fat, with a little bit attributed to like water weight. In resistance trained individuals, it's not as pronounced in terms of fat gain. Fat gain is a little bit less, and there's some, in, you know, the skeletal muscle mass increase is more pronounced. Now, ultimately, we have to add protein into the mix, because this is the thing that shows time and time again to be the big disruptor. So I think it would actually be cool to just read a report directly from PubMed. Let's see. wanted to find this one snippet. All right, so this says, this is conclusion. The majority of overfeeding research to date has been conducted in sedentary individuals and used an energy surplus far exceeding what could be considered reasonable. This evidence collectively shows that overfeeding increases body weight primarily through fat mass, and that gains in fat-free mass are likely due to changes in total body water rather than lean body mass. And then it talks about protein, and it says consuming less than 1.2, where is it? Was that kilograms? Yeah. 1.2 kilograms per pound is rather insufficient in terms of gaining lean body mass. This is supported by recent evidence showing that the current RDA is not sufficient to meet protein requirements of various sedentary populations, including elderly women or men aged over 65 years, or women over 80 years, or young men in their 20s. It should be over 1.3 grams per kilogram, I'm trying to find the part here. Here we go. There it is. Research that involves resistance-trained individuals includes a reasonable energy surplus and is confined to the effects of manipulating protein intake. This evidence suggests that there may be an upper limit in which in additional protein intake does not result in a gain in fat-free mass. Considering that high-protein diets have not been shown to adversely affect kidney, bone, or metabolic health in athletes, the bulking athlete, i.e. his or her primary goal is to increase body weight and or lean body mass, appears to be best served by consuming more than 2.2 kilograms per pound and perhaps as high as 3.4 kilograms per pound, which is basically like one, I think, yeah, that would be 1 gram. Sorry, I keep saying this incorrectly and I apologize. Because they do all these abbreviations and I'm trying to like interpret it on the spot. When I say I'm talking about kilograms of body weight and grams of protein. So it'd be 2.2 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. So an easy way of saying that, because 1 pound is 2.2 kilograms. I'm sorry, 1 gram is 2.2. This is the best podcast I've ever done. Why can't we just use our same damn metric system across the board? Why do we have to? Anyway, we're talking about pounds to kilos is 1 to 2.2. So when I say 2.2 kilograms, basically it's 1 gram per pound of body weight or 1 gram per kilogram of body, like that would be, let's just stick with pounds because I'm a stupid American. 1 gram per pound of body weight. That is the, what they're saying for a bulk, for gaining lean body mass, that is what the research is saying is ideal. Or the upper limit goes up to 3.4 grams per kilogram of body weight. So 2.2 grams per kilogram is basically the equivalent of 1 gram per pound of body weight, which would mean if you're a 200 pound person and you're consuming 200 grams of protein per day. And now if you were, I'm actually going to have to do the math here because now it's pissing me off that I keep saying this so horribly wrong. If I take a 200 pound person, that person weighs 91 kilos. So the 91 kilo person would also consume 200 grams of protein. The upper limit of that would be 3.4. But that would basically be a pound and a half. So if you were 200-pound person and we times that by 1.5, that would be 300 grams of protein. So 300 grams would be the upper limit. Anywhere between 1 to 1.5 grams per pound of body weight. I want to take a brief pause in this episode to tell you about Organifi. Organifi is something that should be in your daily routine. Just quite frankly, I see way too many people who struggle with quality habits, with food quality, with getting their micronutrients in, with sleep quality. Well, Organifi has you covered on all of the above. And it's very low barrier. It's very, just an easy way to start your day with something positive. Rather than thinking about, oh, I have to, get my whole workout in. I have to get my steps in. I have to do all these things. Like, just start with the first thing. The first thing is you wake up, you get yourself together and you go get a glass of water and you mix some green juice in it. So now you've started with hydration. You've started with some micronutrients. You kind of got your insurance policy for your veggies. Really positive habit to start the day. It just kicks off the momentum for everything else. And now the rest of the dominoes can fall into place. So that's how I start. Crisp apple, green juice. Great way to start my day. And usually it's my my lemon water, actually, and then the green juice. Either way, or same concept, starting with a positive habit. Then ending the day, no matter what happened during my day, if things went perfectly or went sideways, usually it's sideways, but you know what I mean. Sometimes things happen to go well. I like to conclude the day with something positive, like my Organifi Gold Juice, the chocolate flavor, because it gives me that dessert feeling to end the day. Sometimes what I'll do is I'll have my gold chocolate and then my Ninja Creamy ice cream. Such a good combination. It's like the ultimate guilt-free dessert combination. But again, quality micronutrients helps you calm down for the evening, puts your brain in that rest and digest state so that you can get better sleep. Mel likes the Harmony product, which is a hormone balancing product. I've been taking the Immunity here and there. Anytime I feel a little sickness coming on, I'll start going in on the Immunity, and plus their collagen and their Shilajit gummies. Oh, my favorite. Every day. Actually, I'm going to go take some after this podcast is over because I haven't taken my Shilajit this morning. But that's part of usually my pre-workout, but I take it every day. Great adaptogen. You get 20% off all of Organifi's products by going to Organifi.com/popfam. That's Organifi.com/popfam. Use the code popfam at checkout for 20% off. Go check it out. And now let's get back to the episode. So how does this relate to overfeeding? Well, when we look at overfeeding, primarily from carbohydrates or fats, we're seeing an increase in body fat with less of an increase in fat-free mass. So here's the conclusion. It is evident that overfeeding on carbohydrates and or fats results in body composition alterations that are different than overfeeding on protein. It is commonly believed that 3,500 kcals is equivalent to 1 pound of fat, and that changing energy balance in accordance with this will produce predictable changes in body weight. However, the overfeeding literature to date does not support this assertion. Dietary protein appears to have a protective effect against fat gain during times of energy surplus, especially when combined with resistance training. Therefore, the evidence suggests that dietary protein may be the key macronutrient in terms of promoting positive changes in body composition. Whew, man. This is what I get for trying to go into the research and like bounce around on different studies and then looking at this to make a conclusion. I could have said that way more concisely. I apologize. But as you know, I don't do any editing on here. So I could have scrapped that whole thing and made it pretend and pretended like it never happened. But we have to live with our flaws, imperfections, and all. So the bottom line is, if you are going to eat in a surplus, it is best to eat in a surplus from protein. I actually mentioned this when I talked about my reverse diet, which is still kind of happening. I increased my calories first from protein and I kept losing weight. Then I bumped up in fats and carbohydrate. My current protein is at 240 grams and I weigh 180. So that would be, let's see, I weigh 185, but 180 was an easier number to do mental math. So half of that would be 90. So 180. So I'm under that 1 point. So my upper threshold would be about 270. So I could confidently go up to 270 grams of protein as an upper limit. I'm not going to, just because I'm good with my progress. But that's just something to keep in mind, is that you can hit that upper limit and it will protect against gaining body fat in a surplus, or having most of your weight gain be from body fat in a surplus. It's just one of those little ace cards that we've got in our back pocket. So the basic gist of this whole conversation is that there's not much that we can do to increase our metabolic rate other than muscle helps a little bit. Movement helps a lot of it. Resistance training helps with body composition, and protein is the master player here, where if we're going to overfeed, it is best to overfeed on protein, because that will protect against the whole theory of 3,500 calories equals a pound of fat gain. If my maintenance is 2,000 calories and I eat 5,500 calories, I'm not going to gain a pound of fat if I am consuming a high protein diet, like 1.5 grams per pound, as an example. It will protect and I will gain some, just like a little bit. But again, it's also important to recognize that these are done over time periods. This is not a single day. This is not done in a single day. So it's important to remember that. It's cumulative, meaning over time. So that's it. Like that's how your body upregulates. That's the way that we can control it. Don't get caught in a cycle of trying to, you know, just always increase your step counts, because there's other things that matter, like stress and recovery and sleep. There's no reason to try to eat as much as you can and then walk as much as you can to burn off the additional calories. The whole purpose, and like, let's let this be the practical takeaway. Well-balanced meals, sufficient protein, adequate protein. And then when you're in a fat loss phase, we keep it short and sweet. Moderate deficit, not too extreme. Diet breaks, maintenance days, refeeds, whatever you want to call them, are mixed in. And then we get the result and we get out. And when we get out, we still want to pay attention to what we're eating and continue with the process of well-balanced meals, high-quality food, adequate protein, and then getting to your new maintenance and staying there, and then gradually, ultimately moving away, ideally, from tracking. Now, there's certainly ways to do this without tracking. It just, tracking is one way to monitor what's going on in terms of your intake. Even if we're not great at being accurate with our tracking, it definitely helps. So that's the practical takeaway. It should be really straightforward. Unfortunately, we like to screw ourselves up mentally, which is why the irony to all of this is we can talk about like the science, we can talk about the research, although I'm sure you want me to stop talking about research forever. We can talk about personal anecdote, and we can talk about all that stuff. None of it really matters if you can't get out of your own way. None of it matters if you can't get out of your own way. You know, it's one of those things that kind of have to earn the right. You have to earn the right to diet. You have to earn the right to do this, because it's just about consistency, keeping the commitments that you made to yourself. And a lot of times we sabotage. I can't tell you how many people have everything they need to move forward, or to even just like have a coach to help them solve this. Like, I've been struggling for 10 years. I can't figure this shit out. I'm so frustrated. It's like, great. Well, let's do this. We'll help you figure this all out. And then they just can't get out of their own way. They have all the things to just do it, achieve the result and never look back. And they just can't get out of their own way. That is always going to be priority number one, is figuring out why that happens and taking the leap. Like, you know, I've had calls last week, and I had one person who was just like, I have to do this no matter what. I'm going to make it happen. And then another person who was like, I know that I need this, but excuse, and then delays, and then doesn't do anything. And unfortunately, that person will continue in the same pattern until they inevitably realize, oh shit, I still have this problem. I'm still wasting time. I should have just done the thing that I know I needed to do from the beginning. And but that's what happens. That's the difference. Like, there's always going to be a tale of two paths. There's always going to be the sustainable, let me fix this, let me do it the right way, let me get the help that I need. And then there's going to be the person who talks themselves out of getting the help that they need and struggles longer, where they don't need to struggle longer, but they do. And then inevitably they recognize that I wasted a lot of time. I didn't actually, you know, save any money because I was spending it on other shit that wasn't as important, or I was spending it on stuff that didn't actually work, and then comes back around. And that's the tale of two paths. And it is a tale that's as old as time. And it will always be the case. There will always be people that find a way to talk themselves out of getting the help that they need, which sucks. I was that person for a long time. Now I'm the person that seeks out help as even before it's a problem, because I don't think we need to be in dire situations to get help. I think we can be more proactive and less reactive. And I try to live that way as well. Anyway, hopefully that's somewhat helpful. And, you know, maybe it's not. I apologize if it's not. But if you have any questions, just reach out on Instagram at @coach_Mike_Milner. And I might file this one away as the worst episode that I've ever done, but it happens. And now it can only go up from here. I appreciate you bearing with me through this one, and I will talk to you soon.